The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Welcome to a brand new best podcast in baseball. This week, I check in with my good friend Kevin Wheeler, and we talk about the Cardinals. They've won eight. Wait, that's not a news flash that we're talking about the Cardinals. Okay, hold on a second. They've won 18 out of the past 23. But there's something about this runway and reset that we need to discuss. Not only do they need to recalculate this team and how it could be a contender in the division, but with all the performance, are they really getting the playing time as advertised for some of the young players? Or is there a catch? Ugh. Oh, you groaned.
I saw what you did there. You're not going to hide anything from me.
Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by CamelX, 1120 AM, but now also available on FM, Kevin Wheeler. You do like six shows now, Kevin. It's incredible.
Yeah. Well, I'm not so much on the Gas House Gang. That's just occasional now. But yes, a Dave Glover show. And then we got the Redbird Rush Hour. Matt Pauly and I, 5 days a week, right into Cardinals baseball. When the early games don't boot us, you know, sometimes we get booted by the early games. But the two of us do it 5 days a week. And Bernie Miklas joins us a couple times a week. So, yeah, I'm talking a lot, which, as you well know, suits me.
Yeah, that's right. Were you nudged out of the Gas House Gang because you didn't play an instrument?
I don't think that's it. I think it's probably because my boss didn't want my voice on the air for six straight hours.
Well, good news for podcast listeners. We're going to have a BPIB of six straight hours here. So buckle up. Well, Kevin, thank you very much. I realize that we're doing like a monthly check-in, and I would kind of like that.
Anytime. Yeah. I love it.
Freshly back from Baltimore, where I saw the Cardinals take 2 of 3 from the wallowing, stumbling, very confusing Baltimore Orioles. Mm-hmm. They still have window with these young players. They still got great young players.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And more coming,
but they just did not, they have not capitalized it. They at times look like a mess, man. And I sat there and watched the game Wednesday, which they got in despite the rain. And, you know, Cade Povich was out there giving up rockets. Mm-hmm. And I was astonished, just astonished. Anybody who was sitting beside me in the press box would, I'm like, where are his teammates? Where are the people? Like, he gave up, like, all right, fine. In one inning, he gives up the runs. They still have the lead. But the next inning opens up with double. And it's at that point in time. And they're not like bloop doubles. These are rockets.
Yeah.
He's not fooling anybody.
No. Nope.
And they are crushing him. And he looks like, and this is a new thing, right? Like, you know, the pitch timer's counting down. And that's the world he's in now. I mean, you know, before the pitch timer, he probably would have walked off the mound and stepped off. But now, you know, he's got to deliver, and there was no one there to buy him time. Catcher didn't come out. Infielder didn't come over to scrape off the mud off his cleats.
No. Well, there's only so many visits, you know. I mean,
you got to be kidding me, though.
No, in those spots, that's when you got to do it.
I mean, that game was coming apart on him, and they're just like, you know what, man, let's keep going.
Well, you know, that team is a pretty good example of how what happens. You know, like when a team struggles, it's not just your team that does those things or has problems making decisions or picking a path or making the right moves, right? Like, this is not a thing that, like, Cardinal fans, a lot of them tend to make it out like things that are happening to them only happen to them. And mm-hmm. they don't happen all around Major League Baseball, even with good franchises. Baltimore just got, I don't know what it is, Derek, maybe too attached to their kids. Maybe too attached to the owner's money, even though the new owner supposedly came in and said he was willing to spend.
But
you let Corbin Burnes walk out the door. Fine. Maybe he was going to leave anyway, because, you know, he picked Arizona because it's his hometown. It's where he lives in the offseason. So maybe you're losing him, but there are other guys. You could have, I mean, they've got plenty of prospects, and you chose to keep, you know, Ryan Mountcastle instead of giving Kobe Mayo a chance to play. Now Kobe Mayo's riding that shuttle back and forth, not knowing what his future is. You might as well have just traded him.
Yeah.
For a real pitcher that could make you better.
Yeah. One of the things that was brought up, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, was that in that moment, that's the difference between a team going through the tank and rebuild.
Yeah.
And relying solely on young players, mm-hmm. and the benefit of having veterans around for the rebuild or reset.
Yeah.
That was a contrast between the Orioles and the Cardinals in that moment, in that game. The Cardinals have a veteran around or two.
Oh, yeah.
That Wilson Contreras would have come over. Like, he would have come over if he
Arenado
were on the field.
Would have done it.
Arenado would have come over and scratched off his cleats. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and that's – do you think there is something real – look, the Cardinals are not the team they imagined. They're far better than the team
you're right.
Prepared to be. But do you think one of the things that would have been lost – in this reset season, had they pulled off the trades that they wanted, is a veteran presence? Let's say they go into the offseason and say, Wilson, you want to go to a contender? He goes, yes. Hey, Sonny, you want to go to a contender? Yes. Nolan, you want to go to the Astros? Yes. You know, and they just scrape the roster clean of any seasoning, any of that veteran, you know, stubble, so to speak. And do you think that would have been a mistake?
Well, it would have clearly been a mistake for this year, right? I mean, because they were always holding out some hope that they could be good. They weren't really going all in on it, but they were always – Mo always referred to the possibility of being good.
I think he said that for ticket sales, Kevin.
I think they
were braced to be pretty bad.
Maybe so, but they saw that, and if you had any hope of being decent this year, that hope would be rooted in keeping at least a couple of those guys, not necessarily all of them, but at least a couple of those guys. I don't know that it changes so much your long-term development picture for young players.
Okay.
But it definitely would have changed this year. I mean, you're having stable veterans, and look, if Wilson isn't performing or if Sonny isn't performing, we can talk all day about that presence. It doesn't matter. Sure. You know, but part of the reason that the team is good is those three guys are providing something. You know, Nolan, it's more defense than offense, but he's providing something big, right? It's elite defense. Mm-hmm. And Contreras, really, since the, 10th, 12th game of the year, has been Wilson Contreras. Like, he's been a real middle-of-the-order bat.
Yeah.
And Sonny Gray's been a very solid part of the rotation at the top of it. And without him, you'd be missing your second-best starter so far this year.
Somebody asked me recently, they're like, yeah, the Cardinals are fine and they're contending, but do they have an MVP candidate? Like, who do you talk about as their MVP if they're going to keep pushing here and keep making some noise and maybe even overtake the Cubs or at least at some point in time lead the division or lead a wild card? And I said it's Wilson. It's Wilson Contreras, right?
Yeah,
isn't that the answer?
He would be, yeah. I mean,
Brendan has the doubles, has the hits, drives and everything like that, but when you talk about kind of the muscle in the middle of the order that goes after an MVP, that's got to be Wilson, right?
I would think. I mean, to me, he's always the guy that has the highest upside. He's one of the only guys on this team that can hit 25, 30 homers. What's one thing? Right. He hasn't gotten there, but that's mostly been because catchers sit more than everybody else. You know, he's not playing as many games.
They prefer to call it squatting. Kevin.
No. They have more games off. Let me be more clear. They get more games off. They don't get as many ABs. But no, you know, that's another one of the interesting things about this team is they are a really good, productive offense, mm-hmm. but they don't hit a lot of home runs.
Yeah.
And I think they'd have more, right? I mean, they'd have a few more if Herrera didn't miss a month. You know, like, he's not a home run hitter, but he would have had a few more in there. But I think they've found their lane, though, right? They found their lane as a team that can produce slug by using doubles and homers, and the home runs are less so, but they're not just a bunch of slappies either. You know, I mean, you look at Herrera's, his production is crazy, and his underlying stuff backs it all up.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
It's not fluky. And like, we looked at this the other day. I was talking to Ricky Horton on DGS on Thursday, Derek, and we're talking about all the guys, and he was noting how many guys are between like 23 and 29 RBIs. Like, everybody's driving in runs and helping. And mm-hmm. then I noted that, and Herrera's got 26, even though he's played half the games of everybody else.
Right, right.
He's only three off the team lead in RBIs, and he's played half the games.
Cardinals are the only team in baseball with 10 different players who have at least 15 RBIs.
Yeah.
And that is in large part because they have four catchers, and three of them have at least 15 RBIs. I am, of course, including Wilson Contreras in that.
Yeah.
But, my question I wanted to talk about with you, former college catcher, is whether or not the Cardinals actually don't have four catchers on the roster. Is it two? Like, at what point in time is Ivan Herrera a DH? And that's his role. It's 24. It seems really, really early. But he's going to get a majority of his playing time here in the next few weeks at DH, it sure seems, with occasional starts. Oliver Marmol said one or two a week at catcher.
Right.
He got the one against the Orioles, and what happened? Three stolen bases. Now, he didn't have much of a chance on at least two of them. They just were taken on the pitcher.
Right.
But it shows that teams are eager, willing, and off to the races when he's behind the plate. So what do the Cardinals do, Kevin?
Well, I mean, I think it's what they do, what they're currently doing, which is you play him back there sparingly, so that allows you some opportunities to get more of your bats in the lineup. But you got to pick and choose your battles. If you're facing a team that runs a lot, if you're facing a team, like the Cubs that has a few guys that are going to run on you, or like Tampa with Chandler Simpson. Oh, I think he got demoted after Thursday's game. But either way, like, I think you got to pick and choose your spots when you feel like, okay, maybe we need an extra bat tonight. That would be an opportunity to, slide him behind the plate and, either DH Burleson or DH Gorman or whatever. I mean, you have some options there to get guys in. That's why it's useful to be able to, for him to still be able to go back there. But I think long-term it's very clear that he's not going to be their catcher. And that's fine. I'll tell you what, I mean, I think the smart move moving forward, Derek, would be keep catcher in your back pocket. Mm-hmm. You can always be the third catcher, the emergency catcher, the occasional catcher. Put some first base into his regimen in the offseason and in spring training. You only have Wilson Contreras under control. You're only locked into him for two more years. Mm-hmm. Now, if he's going great at the end of those 2 years, will you pick up the option year? But if you don't, who's the long-term first baseman? Maybe it's Herrera. Maybe that's a guy that has some value in that position, even if it's just sharing it with someone else. But the point is, he doesn't have to be just a DH. He can be catch short-term once or twice a week and DH the other times. Long-term, it could be catch a game every couple of weeks, half of them at first, half of them at DH, so you don't have a young guy that's just pigeonholed into one spot.
You have a good feel for this, Kevin, from the sense of how much experience matters, though, behind the plate. If he is not catching in game speed conditions and game conditions, is he stalling in his development then? And where does that factor into this conversation?
It's a big factor. But, the things that we have measurements on that are related to, what you would think of as repetition, he's been okay. Right. He blocks the ball okay. He's framing the ball okay. He's about league average on framing. Yep. What we don't have a measurement for, and, we can only go by conversations, is how well does he call a game? Pitchers, pitching coaches, managers are the ones that are going to know that.
Right.
And that's probably 50% of the defensive job. 60% of the defensive job is just that, game planning, executing a game plan, making adjustments on the fly, all of that. The throwing is a problem, but I'm looking at it, Derek, and his pop time, he doesn't have enough reps to qualify, but he's in the top 25%.
Yeah.
I know, again, doesn't qualify, but his pop time is just as good as a lot of guys that are throwing people out.
Yeah.
So it's not just, if I'm looking at his specific, throwing metrics, right? His velocity is lower than it was last year, believe it or not. His arm strength, his velocity is down. It's 78 miles an hour. Most guys that are catching that are, let's say, regulars. I think there's only maybe 8 or 10 that are below 80 miles an hour on average total. So, he's in the bottom tier of that. His exchange time needs to get faster. It's not terrible, but, at 0.65, you're probably average-ish. But when you have below average arm strength, that needs to be better. And there are plenty of guys like who's the one that comes to mind? Like Andy Rodriguez is under 0.6 of a second. Patrick Bailey is under 0.6 of a second.
Patrick Bailey's really good.
Yeah. So like you can, that would be my target is much more about that than arm strength. But I think we don't have any charting on this, but using my eyeballs, having watched all these games, I think the biggest problem is ball placement. He doesn't put the ball on the bag.
It tails.
Yeah. I mean, his ball is always inside the line, and that some from memory, because there's no measurement for this. We need this, by the way. We need to talk to Mike Petriello and see if we can get charts of where the catcher's throws reach the bag.
Like a strike zone kind of thing. Like
yes.
A track.
Yes. Because I can tell you right now that a chest high throw with a great pop time is not an out.
Yeah.
It's got to be knees to the ground. And if you go watch old highlights of Yadier Molina, he was as good at that as anybody. The throw was inside the bag, shin high, almost every time.
Yeah, speaking of great plays at second, real quick aside here and then back to catch. But Jackson Holliday putting the tag on Lars Nootbaar was so, like, fundamentally elegant. I don't know any other way to say it.
This is great.
After watching the clunkiness around second of some of these other teams as swim moves and chest tags and all these replays show that the guy was safe at second because the tag wasn't down. You know, Jackson Holliday at second there, he gets a throw from Dylan Carlson, right? And it just was, all right, well, there's no way around that for Lars Nootbaar. He just was out. And it was so smooth, so well done, and so just sound. It was like, yeah, that's a Holliday. That makes sense.
Yeah. Guy that's been schooled from the word go. Yep.
Yep.
That's what it looks like. And he's, by the way, just his overall game starting to come into shape, which
no kidding.
You know, people forget how young guys are, man. He's 21 years old.
Yeah, he's putting some stock into the ball. 14 out of 16 games when he's been the leadoff hitter, he's been on base.
Yeah.
Since they moved him there. You know, if there's a bright spot for the Orioles, it's his play coming in. And, you know, I did kind of wonder, I was like, I wonder if like a year from now or 2 years from now, he's that infielder who goes to the mound and goes, all right, you know, let's just get you a moment here. You know?
Yeah. He seems to have the game sense.
Yeah.
Which would make sense given that, you know, grandpa, dad, uncle, brother, everybody in the family is a ball
younger
player.
Brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Herrera's numbers in relation to other catchers, like in compared to, you know, the average and all that, because I do think part of the calculus for the Cardinals has to be that relative to others.
Right.
If he's going to be the DH, his production has to be better than relative to others, right? If he's going to be a first baseman, the production has to be better than relative to others, because we know that his offensive upside and already his offensive reality is better than average for catchers. And that gap is big. So if you put him at DH, put him at first base, are you actually not getting the same production relative to others that you have to take into account?
It depends, right? Like if we talked about this in the offseason with Contreras, if you looked at his numbers as a Cardinal, you know, because obviously he missed some time, but if you just look at his rate numbers and protract them out, he rated as a top 6 or 7 first baseman in all of baseball.
Oh yeah. Top 5 in some of the runs created.
Right. Exactly. And a lot of the adjusted numbers, he would be top 5. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of the same, right? Like they're not that many great DHs. How many DHs out there are you like, yeah, that? What's that?
Not anymore, because
well, that's kind of my point. So, like, relatively speaking, he might end up being one of the top 3 or 4 regular DHs.
And first base production's down this year.
For some weird reason, yeah. But again, either way, I still think his production's going to rank near the top. Now, is the gap as big as it is at catcher? Well, no. But this is some about, like, what you have now, right? Pajes is your defense guy. Mm-hmm. Who occasionally puts a charge into one. Pozo's pretty good swinger of the bat. Like he's not bad, and he's okay defensively too. But you also have Jimmy Crooks, who's close, who can swing it a little bit from the left side. And Bernal is really taking a big step forward at Double A so far this year. In fact, I think the last, didn't he just win an award for Player of the Week?
He did, Texas League Player of the Week.
I mean, like,
first one in a long time for the Cardinals, even though they had Jimmy Crooks, Texas League MVP last year.
Right, right. And like, so they, you know, when you're looking at the longer term, like this year, I think we can see what's working and what makes sense. And in the longer term, it makes even less sense to keep Herrera behind the plate for too long. I mean, again, Bernal, we don't know what it's going to look like, right? We see a lot of guys that hit well in Double A that don't hit well at Triple A or the majors. But I mean, that's a guy that's got some pop. Mm-hmm. He's got, I think, 17 home runs in his last 140 games in the minor leagues, and he's always been young for his level because he's only 21 and he's
and he Double A. Not, and he does not look young. Like
his, no, he's a big dude.
His physicality, his athleticism,
yeah,
even just his whole affect. He's not.
No, like, he's not.
No, if you were to line up the catchers and rank them, like go, mm-hmm. hey, just visually rank them by age, Bernal would be like, oh, that's the guy in the big leagues.
He looks it, yeah, and you know, honestly, Crooks kind of has that look too.
Crooks does too. Yeah, Crooks is an interesting player. He's doing fine. 256, 316. 429 slash in AAA. They cleared space for him to be the priority guy there.
Yeah.
And they had Pozo come along to be like more of the, you know, the complimentary catcher filling in, helping to prep games, all that stuff, right? He was going to be that guy, but obviously he's in the majors now. You know, I mean, yeah, I took a look at this for the weekly newsletter I do, Kevin, you know, just kind of the developing parade of catching prospects the Cardinals have. I mean, there are catchers at every level because there have to be, but the Cardinals have like a catching prospect at every level, which pretty is much. Interesting to note because
and the best one's probably the youngest one,
right? He's in rookie ball.
Raniel Rodriguez is pretty special with the bat. I've not seen any of those guys play a lot of defense. I saw Crooks a little in spring training.
Yeah.
Bernal, from my understanding, the reports are not anything special about defense.
No, it's fine.
Work in progress, but
they're excited about it.
So, yeah, right, right.
They're excited. Oh,
they're also young that can change.
And he's spending a lot of time with the Cardinals' new catching coordinator.
Yeah.
You know, after Bernal in high, they have Ryan Campos, who gets a lot of credit for his feel for the game and his experience. You know, you're talking about a guy who was a couple times the finalist for Collegiate Catcher of the Year, which they named for Buster Posey, that award.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not the biggest of guys. So there's not power there. There's not power projection. There's not anything, but he's regarded as savvy. At the level below him is Sammy Hernandez, which, if you remember that name, it's because he was part of the Yenesis Cabrera trade. Things.
Okay. Right, right.
You know, and he just throws guys out. Like he's thrown out 21 of 68 runners. And I'm sorry, that was last year. He threw out 21 of 68 runners last year. He's thrown out 32 of 98 in the past 2 years, which is with bigger bases and minor leagues. I mean, that's, you correct me if I'm wrong, but that's pretty good.
Right.
And then you have Rodriguez. He's 18. His bat has been two levels above every level he's played. There's no other way to put it. I mean, he is dominant at the plate. He's getting national attention because he just went on a homer jag there down in Jupiter with the Complex League team. I'm really eager, Kevin, to see how high his bat takes him this year, and they try to see if his catching catches up.
Yeah.
Or if, I mean, how do you feel about that? Do you feel like with a catcher, defense should always determine how high they go because of what a challenge that is? Or would you be all right if offense elevated a guy and the defense had to catch up to the speed of the level?
It's always about the scale of the offense, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to live with struggles if it's Mike Piazza.
Right.
And again, Piazza did some things well defensively, just not everything, right? Nobody would have said this is a Gold Glove catcher, but you know, I just heard Al Leiter the other day say he loved the game that Piazza called for him.
I like it when Al Leiter talks about Piazza. It changes people's perspective.
I mean, but he was pretty, from my, again, we don't have a lot of numbers on that era, but from my memory of watching him, was not good with balls in the dirt and didn't throw a lot of runners out despite having a pretty good arm.
He was very rigid. He was a very
He wasn't athletic. He wasn't smooth. But again, nobody cares when you're a Hall of Fame bat, right? Like, so it's always a sliding scale, and this is how I view every position, right? In fact, we used to talk about this a lot, this sliding scale, when it came to left field with Tony La Russa's teams, right? Where, you know, if somebody's hitting, nobody's going to care about your defense in left field. You know, like Dunk, that was a big thing with Chris Duncan. And when he first came up, he was not good out there because he hadn't played out there. I mean, to be fair to him, he was a first baseman until he came to the big leagues, and they just throw him out there. But when he was producing, nobody cared. When he was hitting, it was fine. Nobody cared. It wasn't a big deal. And then when the producing slows down because of injury or whatever, well, then the defense becomes much more noticeable. And it's kind of the same idea with Jordan Walker, right? I mean, you know, when he's not hitting, the defense becomes more glaring. And he's a better defender now, so that's not as big of a thing to keep an eye on. But a year ago, that was a big part of it.
Kevin, he's a defensive replacement now.
I know. See that?
He's coming in for the defensive saves.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? But, like, you know, also wonder what, you always all wonder what he could have been if they had. This is one I beat
done
this
it earlier.
I beat this. I beat this dead horse. Like, I don't. He should never have played a game as a pro at third base.
Yeah, I don't.
Not a single game. Every scout in the draft said he's an outfielder. Everybody knew it. You had two or three third basemen lined up in front of him. You're how many guys that weigh 260 pounds play third base?
None of that height.
I mean, that's my point. It's like he's 6'6" or whatever. Yeah, Roland was tall. You know, like, they're big third basemen, but they aren't 260. They're usually 220, 225 if they're big guys like that. Right. And he wasn't 260 when he was 17 or 18, but he was already 230 or 240, which means you can tell he's going to be bigger than that. Everybody's bigger than they are when they're 17, 18.
Well, they're projecting him to be bigger, so why not project for a position for that bigger play?
And his skill set plays there. He runs well. He's got a cannon for an arm. I mean, like, he's
got a great arm.
It just never made sense. And I honestly think a lot of that hurt him offensively too.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it took his ability to focus on hitting off away because he was having to do both and then struggling with both.
Well, I don't think he had any he didn't have much positive to cling to.
Right.
Like, we talk about a lot.
But now he does. Now he does. Now he's like, yeah. And look, he's had a couple of misplays. There's no denying that. He's had a couple of balls. You're like, oh, he probably should have caught that. Mm-hmm. But it's not routine ones. It's more difficult plays back near the wall. Right.
Yeah. He had a tough one on that one that he dove in on. And it
Exactly. But that's also, look, 20, 21, 22 year old outfielders do make those mistakes.
Yeah.
Even ones that have been big leaguers for their whole lives. I do think you're right, Derek. When you have something to hold on to, as an example, Nolan Arenado, he's not hitting this month, but his defense has been elite as it always has been. You've got something positive going, and that can help your psychology because you're not stressed about everything.
Yeah, yeah. And with Jordan, you know, one of the positives he's clinging to, and it's very clear, I hope it comes through to the fans because I've tried to detail it and explain it. But it doesn't take very long to be around the team to sense it is the, what he's getting from coaches.
Yeah. Like
what he gets from Brandon Allen, what he get the hitting coach, what he gets from Brent Brown, the hitting coach, what he gets from John Jay. I mean, if Jordan is trying to cling to positives and not just rating his presence in the majors on how much he plays, how many balls he catches, and how many hits he has, these three things that for a long time have really measured his contribution. I mean, he's got coaches saying, no, you're doing this and no one's seeing it yet, but it's showing up. Mm-hmm. No, you're making this improvement. I mean, the positive strides he took defensively are a lot related to just the cheerleading aspect that John Jay brought. And I'm going to go do this with you. I'm going to go take these routes with you. I'm going to go work with you. I'm going to make this fun. I'm going to throw silly bouncy balls at you.
Yeah.
See how you do. I'm going to throw racket balls at you. And you know what? You're not going to do well. You're not going to catch this. It's really hard. I will show you. Oh, look, I didn't catch it. like, this is really hard, but let's get better. And I, you know, it gave him like this like positive feel to all the stuff he was doing. I talked to him after, you know, one of the points from which he's grown here in the past few weeks was in Washington when they had him down in the cage and just had him over exaggerate his load, not even a swing, but just how he brought his hands back. And like, they're like, do it like find that feel. No, go back further. Is that where it is? Go back smaller, you know, just like go through it and over dramatize, over exaggerate what you're doing with your swing so that we can find that feel for it. And Jordan, after doing that, you know, they settle on a hand position that you can see now that he's starting with, and he's kind of using that as his root, right? It's resting the bat against his shoulder. It's putting his hands closer to his chest. That's sort of his cue, right?
Yeah.
Where he wants to begin a swing.
Keep those long arms inside the ball.
Exactly. And also give him a place to rest so that he doesn't feel like he has to generate a whole lot with his hands, right? He's just got these really big hands, and he was just going further and further back with them, which was making it harder and harder for him to catch up to the pitch or even like stop his swing when that pitch was way out of the zone, right? Okay. But just talking to him afterwards, he just was like so encouraged, not by how he felt, because he's like, I'm still kind of sorting through it and trying to figure it out, but by the tutelage he was receiving, mm-hmm. by the support he was receiving. That's different for him. That's that, you know, and he feels that, and he feels like that's putting him in a more positive direction.
You know, and in this is not, I'm not trying to be super critical here. This is just more of an observation. Cause I do understand the circumstances that led to him making the major league team at age 20.
Do you?
But I do. I don't agree with it, but I do. This all should have been, this should be, he should be doing this in the minor leagues, right? Like, he never had the time in AAA to do this because he went straight from AA to the major leagues after a stint in the Arizona Fall League.
That's a great point.
He had a great first, what, 3 or 4 weeks in Jupiter that first spring.
That struggled for a week going into the opening day.
Well, he struggled at the end because he was seeing more major league pitchers.
Well, and he was seeing more spin.
That's my point. Like, it's not, you know, early it's guys that aren't going to be in the big leagues, and it's a lot of fastballs.
Yeah.
And then later you're getting more of the real deal. And I think for a 20-year-old who had never played right field, mm-hmm. there was a lot of benefit to saying, no, he needs to go do this at AAA at age 20. He's never had an at-bat at AAA in the minor leagues before this. This first at-bat in AAA came after a demotion from the big leagues.
Yeah.
And again, I know that this is a current common thing, right? Teams all over baseball do this, mm-hmm. To getting guys to the Jackson Holliday. Jackson Holliday probably wasn't ready last year, but they called him up, and then you play this back and forth game. He was learning a new position at the big league level because they had him playing shortstop in the minor leagues. Now, all of a sudden, he's playing second base, a position he's never played before. And I mean, doesn't that sound familiar? doesn't that sound exactly like? So my point is that this is not just a Cardinals thing, but a lot of guys that are more old school, older players, things along those lines, would be like, this is why guys need to have longer development stretches, where not everybody, some guys are ready at 19, but they're rare. The guys that are ready at 19 and 20 are the freaks. That's not normal. But more guys are coming up at that age and their holes get exposed and they don't have an answer for it because they've never struggled before in their lives. And a lot of them have never seen AAA. And AAA is a great testing ground for a 20-year-old because you are seeing some 30-year-old pitchers and guys that have been in the big leagues and guys that can command the ball and put it where they want to, as opposed to your fellow 20-year-olds that are making big mistakes all the time.
Yeah. It's a really interesting way that you put. I hadn't thought about it this way, in the sense that Jordan Walker did not get to develop at AAA. His AAA experience was
recovering.
Was fixed.
Yeah, it was recovering. It was recovering from failure.
Yeah. Most guys go to AAA and it's like, okay, grow here. And Jordan returned there and it was like, okay, correct yourself here. That's a way different way to go about developing. Good point.
And let's be clear too. There were some great things that happened. Like, he had a really great AA season in 2022. I mean, it's a really great season. Strikeouts weren't a big problem, but they were there, but they weren't a big problem. No. Lots of doubles, home run power coming, you know, all that.
He had a great year.
But the Arizona Fall League showed some concerns. Strikeout rate went up a little bit. Numbers are going to be better out there. Yeah. So if you've got a 900 OPS there, it's probably more like an 800 in you know, non-elevated, non-dry settings. And you, the last 5-6 years, the level of pitching in the Arizona Fall League has been much lower than it used to be, because people aren't risking injuries and they're not putting guys out there.
Right, and they've rethought what the Arizona Fall League is for.
Yes. So
development category, you're right.
And so this is why I say I understand why the Cardinals got excited and did what they did, because this guy had a feel like, maybe this is like a Pujols thing, where this is a guy ready to make a big leap. He's physical. His bat speed is through the roof. He's handled every level. He handled spring training, at least, you know, the first 4 weeks. And I understand it. But I think in retrospect, it's pretty clear that it was, and at the time, even at the end of the spring, I know there were some of us covering the team that were like, this may be a little fast. Cause it's, you know what? I know what's hard. What's hard is telling your fans this really exciting young prospect isn't going north with us. Cause they're gonna be like, oh, they're just trying to save money. They don't want the clock to start. Blah. You got to ignore the noise. And I don't know that factored in. I would guess not. You know, knowing how Mo operates, knowing how the team operates, I would guess they're not worried about fan reaction. They're more talking about like the excitement of this player and what his potential is and all of that.
Yeah.
But when you add it all up, a 20-year-old who had never played at AAA before and who was playing a position that he had almost no experience at, the obvious move is AAA. And yeah. I don't think it's going to ruin the player. I don't think a good player can be ruined. I think if you've got it, if you've got the mental ability to be great, you'll figure it out. And if you don't have that, you never had it. So it's not like it's going to magically appear or disappear. But I do think it slows it a little bit. But keeping in mind, like, you know, I know I brought this up with you before, and I bring it up all the time because of the size comparison, not because of expectations. But Aaron Judge didn't even reach the major leagues until 24.
No,
and his first full season was 25, and Jordan Walker just turned 23, or he's about to, right?
Yeah, and Aaron Judge in college was not the Aaron Judge.
No,
he wasn't cranking out. He wasn't even the biggest power hitter.
That's because he was hitting everything on the ground. He was doing exactly what we talk about with Walker.
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, it's what a lot of guys go through, but you know, Aaron Judge was a high average hitter, or at least for the most part, because scared the living daylights out of
him. He has great bat speed. I mean, that's a big equalizer.
It is. And, you know, ground balls get through and average goes up.
But in the big leagues, they're standing there when you hit it. Right.
Cause they
know where you're going to hit it.
I don't know, man. Like they are, but Jordan is still able. I mean, the 2-run single that he hit the other day against Povich was about 97 off the bat, 98 off the bat. And it was not like a seeing eye single. It was like a scorching good luck single, right? I mean, like that ball was hit pretty hard. I know it wasn't 100, but I mean, that ball was hit pretty hard and it got through to the outfield. And there are plenty of examples of where Jordan just hits the ball on the ground super hard. And if they're not standing right there, they're not getting to it.
Right. But I mean, there's a reason why he's hitting 215.
Right, exactly. No, there is
if you look at his profile, you're like, his bat speed is the best in baseball.
It is. Yeah.
His average exit velocity is in the top 15%. How does he not have better numbers? His hard hit rate's well above average. Well, it's because not just that. It's certainly the strikeouts too. The strikeouts kill it. Striking out 30% of the time doesn't work.
No, strikeouts is where it's at.
That's the number one reason. But the another one is when you hit it hard on the ground, it is still going to get through, but it's still more often than not, there's a dude with a glove standing somewhere near it.
So we've talked about Ivan Herrera and Jordan Walker, and also in the mix here in this conversation and related to the playing time that both of those guys get is Alec Burleson, the guy who was going to be the Cardinals DH a lot of times, but now Herrera is. So Burleson has to find his playing time in right field where Jordan Walker plays, or at first base when Wilson Contreras isn't there, but Wilson Contreras is often there again because Herrera is at DH.
Right.
Marmol does not want to platoon Jordan Walker in the sense that Alec Burleson gets all the starts against right-handed pitching.
Totally agree with that. Yep.
Right. Because then you're eliminating a lot of playing time for Jordan Walker. If you'll permit me, I would like to discuss where these three individuals meet, and it's not with playing time. But, Kevin, do you have a moment for a little bit of history? A little card of history? All right, here we go. Ready? Buckle up. 2009, the Cardinals need a cleanup hitter, and they do what to bat behind Albert Pujols? They trade for a gentleman by the name of Matt Holliday, who was at the games this past week. 2011, their number three hitter, their middle order hitter, their Hall of Fame bound hitter, who would later return to hit 700 home runs, leaves by free agency. Cardinals are in need of a middle order hitter. What do? They sign Carlos Beltran. Fast forward a few years, Carlos Beltran moves on to another team. The Cardinals are in need of middle order hitter, and they turn to their leadoff hitter, who is cranking out doubles and is becoming a power hitter by altering his swing a little bit because of the game. That's Matt Carpenter. But they need somebody to hit behind him. So ahead of the 2018 season, there in the winter of 2017-2018, the Cardinals trade for a cleanup hitter again, Marcell Ozuna. Carpenter struggles in the following years. Cardinals have an opportunity to go out and get a legit middle order bat there ahead of the 2019 season. They are surprised to learn that he's available, and they move fast to get him. That is, of course, future MVP Paul Goldschmidt. Ozuna moves on. Cardinals don't have a cleanup hitter, so they thought Tyler O'Neill would be. They looked at the other guys. So, again, they're in the market for a cleanup hitter, and a trade comes to them that they've been trying to make for multiple years. This time they are able to pull it off. They bring in Nolan Arenado. With the exception of Matt Carpenter, who moved from leadoff to middle order, it is difficult to think of a middle order impact bat that came from within, Kevin. Can you, am I way off on this?
No. No. I mean, history speaks for itself, right?
Right. All right. Which brings us to the present. Their middle order is Brendan Donovan, homegrown guy, number three. It was Nolan Arenado, but now he's batting sixth. Wilson Contreras, another guy brought in from the outside to be an impact bat. And I guess you could argue he was brought in to be a middle order hitter, maybe sixth, right?
Yeah. Like
catcher. Okay. Yep. But certainly now is a middle order hitter, another one imported. If we look at the development of Herrera and Walker and Burleson, and we think about what we discussed at the very beginning, if this team had been absent veterans, what does the middle order look like for the Cardinals, Kevin, if it's homegrown? And what does the future of it look like if they can finally get a homegrown middle order hitter?
I mean, well, first of all, what it can mean is that you have a lot more financial flexibility because you're not constantly paying top dollar for guys to produce, right? I mean,
or constantly trading player capital.
Right. I mean, that you know, recently the farm system has had a hard time developing quality starting pitchers, right? Like the last ones would have been that class of guys like Flaherty, Alcantara, Gallen, right? Like that timing, there hadn't been any since then that were impact guys until. Well,
and two of them didn't pitch for the Cardinals.
Right. I mean, but you developed them, you know, you.
No, I know. But you didn't get any benefit.
But that time frame, and up until that time frame, that was a real strength of the organization. That's changed recently. Their inability to develop, find, draft, sign, whatever, impact bats has been crazy. Like, crazy bad. Right? I mean, like, Matt Carpenter, probably before this current group, is the last one. That was a long time ago. That was a long time ago.
He debuted 14 years ago.
Yeah, and he was a Cinderella story out of nowhere, right? This wasn't a first-round draft pick. Like,
I mean, so was Albert Pujols, so maybe that's what they specialize in. I
totally get it, and that's fine when you find those guys, but you got to find some of them in the first two or three rounds too. Mm-hmm. Like, where are all their first, second, and third-round picks as bats? And so, I don't just mean the recent ones. I think Weatherholt's going to make it. I'm a big fan. You know, like, I'm talking – for the last 10, 12, 15. Right.
You mean, like, Stephens Piscotty.
They didn't hit on any of those. And
you're
that's
talking
what,
about Randall Grichuk. Stick around? Yeah.
I mean, they've cycled through a lot of guys that they had that were high picks, and they just weren't the dudes. They weren't the guys that you needed them to be. Yeah. And most of them didn't go on to be that anywhere else either. So really, after Matt Carpenter. We don't need to go back to Pujols because that's just too far back.
Tyler O'Neill did 1 year
for the Cardinals. They traded for him.
No, I know, but they traded a first-round pick for him. So I think still kind of...
Fair enough. They traded him with team control, so it wasn't a big money contract, right?
Right, and they traded for him because they didn't have a hitter like that
in
their system, whereas they had, to your point, the depth pitching-wise.
At the time, they did, yeah. And when you look around, like, since Matt Carpenter, though, of the guys that they drafted, developed, or even traded for when they were prospects, how many of them have fit the bill? I mean, you know, a Rosarena.
Yeah.
But even he's Adolis not.
Garcia.
He stinks right now. He had one big year. He stinks. He's way below average right now. And he was last year, too.
He had all right fielders and defensive run save, Kevin.
He is a great defender. I'm talking about as a middle of the order bat. I mean, his OPS plus right now is 80. If he was here, people would be screaming what a bust he is.
That's, you know, 20% below league average.
And his OPS plus last year was 5% below. So we're now on 200, his last 200 games, a below average player. But he had a big playoff run. And the same thing with Rosarena. Although I think Randy's a little better this year than he was last year. But this is my point. Like, those are the best bats you've developed.
Yeah.
Since Matt Carpenter. It's guys like that. And they're good. Like, you know, again, Randy Rosarena is an everyday player. He's about 15% above average this year. And he was about that last year. And he was about 4%. No, last year he was, it was right around that, and like 8-9% above average last year. So he's a good hitter, but he's not a guy you're like, yep, that's a three-hole hitter. Yeah. That's not a guy that you're like, that's an annual, every year all-star.
Right.
That's that's a good hitter. That's a good hitter, but it's not a thumper. It's not an all-star bat.
Yeah. No, so that's kind
of... And Oscar Tavares may have been that guy, but you can't bank everything on the hopes of one guy.
Yeah, we talked this past week, and I had a conversation with a couple of players who saw Oscar in the minors, and we were talking about Oscar Tavares and that.
Yeah.
You know, just what a talent he was at Double A and rising. Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the player who the Cardinals look to as saying, like, look, this was going to be the middle order hitter for a long time until his death. And, you know, they obviously have spent a lot of the time since recovering, but they've had years to do so, and they've had moves to do so.
Right.
And I wonder, like, Kevin, I'm going to put you on the spot here, but you know, Wilson Contreras, a couple of years to go. Nolan Arenado, a couple of years to go. Let's say they move on or retire or whatever, right? What's the middle of the order look like for the Cardinals with who they have right now? What's it look like for you? Who's four or five?
Herrera's your three-hole.
Okay.
I mean, right? I might even say this with those guys, but I think he's your best pure hitter.
Okay, so he's your two-hole hitter then?
I don't know that he runs well enough for me to put him there.
Okay, that's really cool. That's a great point.
That's not true, by the way, for all teams. There are guys that don't run well that bat lead off and second. So, you know, for a lot of teams, that doesn't matter.
I think you make a compelling case. That's very interesting.
Because I can see that here's part of the – actually, you know, honestly, might be four-hole because I can look long-term and still see some 1-2-3 that involves the guys that are there now and maybe Weatherhold.
Entirely fair.
Where you're looking at those guys, and then he's the guy that comes in and drives in all the runs. So either way, I think Herrera is an easy answer on that. Again, it's not that much. The crazy thing is we still only have about 300 at bats on him.
Yeah,
you know, there's still not we're not a lock on what he actually is for real.
Right.
We know he can hit. That to me, that's unquestionable. He draws walks. He's got bat speed. He hits the ball hard. He hits the ball consistently hard. So I think he can hit. The question is he this guy or is he just an above average guy? And we're not going to know that for a long time.
Right.
But of the guys you have, he has the look of the guy in 2 years that would fit right there. He fits there now.
Yeah. He would
he'd be fine with other guys.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's that look? So what's all right. I mean, like I'll go right. So Mason Wynn leadoff. Weatherholt looks like a number two hitter in a lot of ways.
I'd flip those guys, but it's okay.
Fine. Obviously Mason likes hitting towards the top of the order. This means something to him. And his game is rounding into form where it is really compelling toward the top of the lineup.
Yeah, so, I love him in the two spot.
Number three. So the reason why number three hitters have changed because of lineup dynamics is because that's the guy who comes up most often with two outs and the bases empty. You know, versus coming up with runners on or runners in scoring position,
right? Right.
Which is highly the cleanup spot and the number two spot. So you see a little bit more OPS in those two spots, yep. or cleanup goes a little more slug, and that goes right into your Herrera suggestion. So number three, I mean, if Brendan Donovan's around, you know, having back-to-back lefties who can handle both left and rights, that's so bad.
Other reason why I flip Weatherholt, and
I wouldn't get all hung up on that because, you know, those two guys aren't type of hitters.
No, I wouldn't get hung up on it, but the way it looks now is the way I like it.
And you
have, I think you're going to have Weatherholt's a better on base guy than Wynn. Right. He's got that skill set, and Wynn, I just love Wynn in the two hole. Cause Derek, I think he might develop power.
Well, sure. That's true. You know,
but either way, I mean, I think we have the right.
He might develop. He probably has some really good, lots of double seasons.
Sure.
Then that's power. That's slugging.
Yeah. Right.
All right. So, and then you get to clean up. So you'd have Herrera. Number five hitter, is that Newt Barr then? Because he's no longer a leadoff? Is he that guy? Could be.
Is he still here in 2 years?
Sure. Just, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, you have team control, so I guess we'll just go by that.
That's what I'm going with that.
Is
he your number five hitter? Because that pretty impactful as a number five hitter. Or is it Burleson?
It could be either one of them. I don't know. I feel like sometimes I'm harder on Burleson than I should be, but there are still a lot of things that concern me. Like, he's gotten better in the month of May, so I want to give him credit for that. But he still chases way too much. And when I look at his expected numbers, they're all below where his real numbers are, which means he's overachieving based on his batted ball quality. So I don't know. Is he going to have enough power to be a five-hole guy?
I mean, it's a great question. What does he have to do to hit for more?
I mean, he's a 420 slug the last 2 years. Is that a five-hole guy? I like it a lot better, six or seven.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, you're right. I mean,
because I think he's a good hitter. Like, there's value in a guy that doesn't strike out a lot and who can occasionally hit a ball over the fence. But, I mean, I'm looking at a sample size now of, you know, what? 1,000 major league at bats and a 405 slug, and he's not 22. Yeah, that's part of the problem. And actually, yes, to me, he is. Again, not picking on the guy. It's really hard for lefties because they don't face a lot of good lefties in the minors. And then when they get to the big leagues, usually they're not used against them. So it's like, okay, well, how are you ever going to develop against lefties when you don't face them?
Well,
so
position plays a part in that. Like, right. Like,
yes, yes.
Okay, what position do you play to not be a platoon player?
Right, right. And I think that's part of the challenge facing him. But yeah, he fits in that range, right? 5, 6, 7.
Sure. And then where does Jordan Walker fit? If Jordan Walker.
That's the 90, that's the $100 million question, right?
It is quite literally the $100 million question.
Or maybe should we change it? The $300 million question.
It is quite literally the $320 million question.
Because if you can't get it out of your guys, that's going to cost you to go get that guy.
Or you never do. Or you just don't.
Right. Or you don't. That's the hope, right? That's the dream. The dream is that Jordan Walker, with experience and major league at bats, starts to figure out how to lay off breaking balls low and away. Mm-hmm. Because the minute he does that, he's a guy you can play every day. The instant he does that, forget any other changes, forget any mechanical tweaks, forget hand placement, forget it all. If he lays off that stuff down and away, he is instantly at least a major league average hitter, if not above average. And then there's room to go bigger than that, right? Because with his bat speed and ability to hit the ball hard, he should be a guy that hits 25, 30 homers. Easy. And maybe more.
Where does he hit?
In a perfect world, he's a guy that hits 3, 4, 5. Right?
So like, I mean, your 3, 4, 5 would be Walker 3.
I don't know. It just depends on the group. Yeah. I mean, it could be
Herrera, 3, 4. Cleanup.
I'm just saying, like, if he reaches his tremendous ceiling, which is a big if at this point, right? It's not a known. But if he has reached that in 2 years,
Yeah.
Then you're looking at a guy that fits there, but then you're also looking at a guy that's what, a year away from free agency, 2 years away from free agency at that point.
Yeah, because of the time. Yeah. Well, so okay, give me your best case scenario lineup. With the hitters on hand, and we haven't talked about Nolan Gorman, who is the one who has the highest run total in the majors for a season of this whole group. And he's just struggled this year, and the performance of others have really squeezed his playing time. But so give me your best case scenario. What does your best case scenario of homegrown hitters 2 years from now look like, Kevin?
Well, your best case scenario is Walker hits third.
Okay. Best case scenario.
If he's that good, you're rolling.
And then Weatherholt and Mason are ahead of him.
Or Newt and Mason, and we figure out where Weather, because we don't, I mean, again, Weatherholt by then is only a year or two.
So maybe he's your eight.
Maybe he's where Victor Scott, maybe Victor Scott's your leadoff man at some point.
Maybe Victor is your leadoff guy.
And maybe you're a lineup that is death by 1,000 cuts, which is kind of what it is now, as opposed to two or three big boppers in the middle.
Right. But then it takes a lot to go right. But
Sure. Yeah. 100%. 100%.
So give me a look. Like, you think Burleson's a complimentary player, not a featured player in the middle of the order.
Yeah.
Herrera is a featured hitter.
I think so.
Chase Davis factor into this at
not
all?
Not a fan.
Okay.
So I'm not saying the player will never figure it out.
No.
I don't love the profile of a college guy that has come in and had a real hard time making contact against professional pitching.
All right, so then you got Burleson as your first baseman, most likely, unless Herrera is.
I mean, yeah, I kind of picture it as Herrera. That's his future spot to me.
Okay.
If he's going to not just be a DH.
So then comes the question, how good is that lineup?
I mean, it could be just like the one now. Right? I mean, if you've got... If you just want to, the order can be determined in a lot of ways. Like, you know, Newt has the skill set of a guy at the top of the order. So if you just stay with your top three as it is now, and then you can line up in some order, Herrera, Walker, and Burley or Weatherholt. I mean, who knows? Maybe Weatherholt's a guy that hits fifth or sixth, because he's not a home run hitter, but he's going to be a lot like Donovan, right? He's going to hit a lot of doubles. He probably, to me, has more home run power than Donovan does, but it's not really his game.
I mean, it's going to be, he's like kind of a Newt Barr Donovan.
Yeah. Player. I mean, like, yeah, I think he's a similar guy, I think, with the ability to hit 20 homers. But again, we have to see how that develops. But I mean, I guess the point is, like, you're looking at a lot of people that can do some things. You know, you're looking at a lot of competent at bats there. You're looking at a lot of lefties with on base skill. You got Victor Scott's speed in the mix with that too. The question then too, in 2 years, who's catching? Is it Crooks and Pajes? Has Bernal taken over in that spot? Is Raniel Rodriguez just the phenom that age 20 bursts through?
At catcher? Wow.
Yeah, I doubt that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's going to happen because he's in rookie ball right now. So.
I mean, if his bat is big league ready at 20, then maybe catcher doesn't matter too much.
No, but I mean, like, that's not going to be happening. Yeah, I mean, as great as the bat is, we're going off of what, 30 games in rookie ball,
and it's overwhelmed.
He's exciting, it's fun, but it's so far down the path.
Yeah.
But your catching spot could easily be in 2 years. Could easily be Crooks and Pajes.
I mean, I look.
I'm in that mix.
I'm impressed with what Rodriguez has done, but part of me is also impressed that he's had that many pitches to hit.
That shows you though that the thing about those levels is guys can't throw the ball where they want to.
Yeah,
they make a lot of mistakes in the middle of the plate. So yeah,
I'm just amazed he's seen so many in the middle of the plate. As wild.
They're probably not trying to do that. I can't imagine they're trying to do that against him.
Well, given this makeup and what you just kind of outlined, is it possible the Cardinals don't need to go shopping for a middle order hitter? Is that where, I mean, that's where they have to get because they're not going to. But, you know, we talk about this catching depth. You could trade that for pitching. It's a lot harder to trade what they have.
Oh, yeah.
Middle order hitter.
No. I think that in 2 years, you're set up better offensively than you are for pitching.
Okay.
I mean, you know, in a perfect world in 2 years, Quinn Matthews is in there. Maybe next year he's in there. And then maybe McGreevy's in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole, but we don't have, maybe, but again, we don't have an idea yet of what those guys are. In 2 years, are they, is Quinn Matthews in 2 years what Liberatore is now or what Liberatore was the last 2 years?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, well, age would suggest that he is what he is now.
Sure, but
college.
And that's true because Liberatore was a much more raw prospect.
High school.
When he made it to the big leagues, he was not as seasoned as Quinn Matthews currently will be when he first arrives in the big leagues. But again, we don't know, like, is McGreevy a three? Is he a five? You know, but by then we know this. By then we know Sonny's not going to be in the factor, and at least not as a top guy, because he'll be too old. And then, you know, the other guys that are in the rotation now, I mean, maybe Polante's around then, maybe not. But to me, that might be where you're going to need the money, or at the back end of your bullpen, if you don't sort it out with the guys that follow in the pen the next couple of years.
I agree with you about needing the money, but I also think that the cost of middle order hitters is just so out.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
What the Cardinals are going to have as their market, you know, related. I just think it's such a real concern.
Yeah.
For all teams of the market size, the Cardinals are basically, if you Atlanta and below, so Atlanta would be the line of demarcation there, right? Like, but if you're below Atlanta, the notion of signing middle order hitters sure seems.
I don't think Atlanta can do it either.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, I get you. They've just developed their guys.
They've traded and developed. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they traded for Olson when Freeman left, but they got a bargain compared to what Freeman got.
Correct.
They also were only able to do that because they have such team friendly deals on Acuna and Riley.
Still adds up. They have all of those, you know, nine.
But they developed their own, and that's what the Cardinals have to do. Like, they drafted, signed, and developed their own superstar bats.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's what the Cardinals are going to have to do.
It is what they're going to have to do. But first step is finding those hitters who are going to be those bats. And if you were to put, I mean, look, they have quantity right now of potential.
But maybe that becomes the long-term strategy. Maybe the long-term strategy is we're just going to have nine tough outs. We're not going to have two guys at the bottom that can't hit. We're going to have nine guys in this order that can either get on base, hit doubles, hit for average, or hit home runs. Like, we're going to find nine, because that's what they're good about now is the depth of the lineup.
Yep.
Like, that's why their offense is good. It's not good because they have the best middle of the order in baseball. Their lineup is good because a lot of guys can do a lot of things, and even a couple of guys on the bench are super talented.
Yeah. Interesting. Standing on the sideline during one of the infield rounds, was they were taking infield at Roger Dean Stadium. I stood there with Brant Brown, because, you know, he works with the hitters. So while they were out there fielding, he had some time on his hands. And he told me, he goes, I'm trying to sell the idea that the best play in baseball is a double-double. And he goes, it's a double to get on base and a double to drive him in. And then you're on base for the next double to drive you in. And this is, that's the type of offense that we need to have. The double double, just hit a double, then score on the next double. Then that guy's in scoring position for the next double. It's a great play in baseball. And I was listening to him describe, like, obviously that's not always going to happen. Right. And that, you know, but as he was describing, I'm like, you know what? That works at Busch Stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I look
at building your team to your ballpark. Yeah.
Yep. I look at this lineup and I'm like, you know what? It's winning other places and it's found its footing on the road and it won two games.
Well, where does that not play?
That's a great question. We were kind of talking about it a little bit because, you know, four different players at Camden Yards brought up hits that they were like, well, at Busch, you know, we play there. Like, we don't get rewarded for it, but we get rewarded for it here. It's one of the places that was brought up as a little curious is Fenway.
Yeah. But how many do you play there? What, three times every 2 years?
No. But you were saying, where does doubles not
play? But even that still plays. Because
they were just bringing up the fact that
fly balls become home runs that are just flyouts.
They're saying it's muted. Like, because.
Yeah. 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 I get you.
You know,
it's a single instead of a double because the wall is so close. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And also, like, some of those doubles where you're like, oh, well, I'm going to score on this. No, you just end up being second and third.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so they're like, the hitters are talking about that it's just like a muted place. Like,
but there are very few places where doubles into the gap don't work.
No, there are very few. There's one we just mentioned.
Yeah, I don't think any other place.
Even then, it's negligible.
So the idea, right, is to build a style that really suits your home ballpark, but still plays.
Which is kind of what they have
in other places. Right. No, that's my, yeah, I think there's always the desire to have power. Mm-hmm. A home run is a rally, you know, a 2-run homer is a rally, a 3-run homer is a rally, mm-hmm. All in one swing of the bat. But if you don't have it, you don't have it. And if you can't afford it, right, you can't afford Soto and the price of the guys that are that. And I don't think anybody here thinks they can. Even the craziest of the crazy fans, not like, yeah, we can spend $700 million on a player. Yeah. I think we all understand that's not the deal. But you do need to develop power still. But that doesn't mean you don't build your team in a way that makes the most sense for your home ballpark. And, because part of the reason I say the power thing is, like, if you want to have success in the postseason, it's still really hard. It's really hard to string hits together when you're facing a team like the Dodgers that has 9 starting pitchers and 5 closers
on the injured list.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. Then you don't have to face them at all. All right. So I'm trying to wrap my head around the fact that, like, you build, it just seems like you have to outplay the probability of prospects to put together a homegrown lineup like you're describing. You have to hit on so many hitters, no, apologies for the pun, to put together a complete lineup like that. Whereas it's such a fascinating, because it's even harder to find, or it's just as hard to find that single player to build a lineup around.
Right.
So, you know, which probability do you want to play? The fact that, okay, well, we can get a whole lot of players of this level to create a deeper, more nuanced, more multifaceted, more, you know, kind of, you know, strong multitasking lineup, or we can develop a hitter who is one that kind of is like the rug in Big Lebowski, brings it all together and is the focal point of a lineup. It's, you know, that's the high dollar guy. That's the high talent, high dollar guy. Gosh, I don't know if there's a right recipe there, but it seems like those are the two.
Yeah, I don't think you have to choose. I think you can do both.
Well, if you can do both, then you're a really good team, right?
No, I mean, like, you can pursue both.
Right, right, okay.
You know, I mean, like, this doesn't mean I'm not going to try to draft the biggest star bat that I can find when I'm picking number 5, right? I mean, I can still do that. And then have, you know, because one thing the Cardinals have been, this is, I don't know how far back we go, Derek. I don't know if it's 20 years. I don't know if it's at least 2006-ish. Because it's the entire time that I've covered the team. Mm-hmm. They're always good at finding solid players and contributors. That's the one thing they're amazingly good at. They are always bringing guys to the big leagues that can play. The Brendan Donovan, Tommy Edman, Lars Nubar, they are great at finding those guys. Mm-hmm. And they have been consistently great at finding those kind of guys forever. Mm-hmm. So right. I mean, they're just always, they always have guys that come up that can, at the very least, be good quality major leaguers, if not stars. Mm-hmm. The thing they've been missing on are the stars, like the impact bats.
Right.
And a lot of the fallback I hear from them sometimes, it has been in the past anyway, is, well, you know, you're picking in the 20s and whatever. I mean, Mike Trout was picked in the 20s. You know, there are plenty of great players taken in the 20s or even in the second round, third round, and you're not taking them. So all different player development models, different scouting directors, like, it's over a long period of time, but they've been consistently good at finding very good complementary players that sometimes become everyday quality. Like Brendan Donovan, he wasn't a big prospect. He wasn't a guy that was, you know, first round draft pick. He's a sure thing, but they find those guys that are like, you know what, this guy can just play.
Yeah.
John Jay, you know, Daniel Descalso, right? That, I mean, like, they've been great at that for so long. Mm-hmm. I don't think you have to worry too much about that. The harder part is, where do we get better at finding stars? Where do we get better? And I don't know if it's drafting or developing, Derek, probably a combo of the two, but, like, Dylan Carlson needs to make it. Mm-hmm. He needs to live up to his potential as a Cardinal when he's a first round draft pick.
Well, Jordan Walker has to make it.
What
about, like, Nolan Gorman?
Nolan Gorman has to make it, right? Those are the guys. Like, when you're drafting big power bats in the early rounds and they have that, you've got to figure it out. And again, it's not always the team's fault. A lot of those things fall on the player too.
Yeah.
But then that, you know, that's just part of the challenge. You've got to hit on some of those guys.
You're always a step ahead of me, Kevin, because that's where I wanted to conclude with this is that, you know, for years, the Cardinals have had to go outside to get that guy. And I wonder if the answer, as we sorted through, like what that lineup looks like as some of these outside additions leave and they do become more internal in their considerations for the lineup and they do become more internal because of the finances of the game, if the fifth pick overall is where this answer is and that and a play for a bat has to be part of their draft decisions.
It can be, but they're also thin on big arms. Right? I mean, like, you know, like other than Quinn Matthews, who's the guy that you're and McGreevy, we'll go with those two guys at AAA. Who's the other potential star pitcher?
Yeah.
I mean, Tink Hens has the ability, but
Tacola Roby is that, yeah, he's the answer. Yeah.
He's getting there. At Double A, he's there.
Nope, he's there, Kevin.
Why is he not in Memphis then?
Join the parade. I mean, Double A and Triple A are all fungible. I mean, No, they're not.
He's got to face these 30-year-old hitters that are going to lay off the crap out of the zone.
He also needs to get on the rotation, be healthy, get some positive feedback. I don't have any problem with that. But you watch him pitch, watch his pitch profile. And the final part of that equation is health and consistency. But I don't.
Well, that's kind of part of the question, right? I mean,
no, I know, but I don't
he's
think
throwing that's 100 innings once in his life.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a matter of what level he's at where he proves that. He has to prove that at any level. But you watch his pitch profile, you watch how he pitches, and man, the guys who are struggling with him at Double A, the hitters, this is going to be the same struggle for hitters whether they're 22 or 32 at Triple A. He's got to prove the routine, prove the health, prove all that. And I understand exactly what you're saying, but that kid, the stuff that he throws is different in a way that works at every level.
I don't disagree, but I'm like, I can't look at that and say that's definitely a top tier arm. It's a top tier talent, but it's the same problem with Tink Hens, who's also a top tier talent.
Yeah,
I mean, you have no track record of being healthy as a starting pitcher, and both guys might end up profiling as relievers.
They might.
Because of that.
Yeah.
You know, they both have great stuff, great arms. I mean, they both, you know, Tink Hens is, I think Keith Law just put him in his top 50 prospects for point.
He did. You know, when Matthews was not.
Yeah, and he's a top 100 guy in almost everybody. Like, I know he's talented. But can he start? Can he throw 80 pitches, 100 pitches? Can he throw? I mean, Tink Hens is 3 years away from being able to throw 150 innings.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
And Roby is not maybe that far, but what's he thrown this year? 40 innings. So he's on pace for 120, maybe if he stays healthy, maybe.
So, all right, let's close here then. What's more likely to happen? That Tacola Roby starts for the Cardinals. Tink Hens closes that game for the Cardinals.
Yeah.
That both of them are throwing to Herrera as their catcher, or that Hens has a lead to save because Herrera is the cleanup hitter.
Yeah, I think the second one. I'm not that they like I don't
they
think Herrera
four scenarios.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you tied those together.
No.
I thought you tied the Roby.
Well, you could say all those things are going to happen in one game in April of 2028.
Right. I'd say on a regular basis, Herrera's not going to be catching when we're talking about that.
So he's the cleanup hitter.
On a regular basis. Right. I'd say it's a lot more, to me, it's a lot more likely that Roby's a starter than Hens. And I want those guys to both be starters. I want Hens to be good. Yeah. And I know he's talented. But, I mean, at some point, the team has got to look at it and say, he's 22 and he's never thrown 100 innings.
Oh, yeah.
We need to get some return on this. And he throws 97 with a wipeout changeup. His stuff can play as a reliever the minute he proves he's healthy.
If we use contending for a National League pennant as the goal, can the Cardinals get by if one of these hitters develop into an impact bat? Do they need two?
I'm always going to lean toward more.
Okay. But can they get by if Herrera is what Herrera is and he's the
standout? Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah. If he's now I'm not talking about hitting 350, but like,
no, I know.
Let's say he's regularly a 20-25% above average hitter.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Do they?
I think they can sustain with depth because I really do like their depth.
And is that a successful turn of events, or is it a disappointment because Jordan Walker isn't there?
No, I mean that part would be disappointing. Like it's disappointing when you got a guy that has that skill set and they don't reach their ability.
Yeah.
And my worry, different players but similar idea. My worry is that it's just Jason Hayward. Offensively. Like Jason Hayward was and to be clear, Jason Hayward has been a very good major league player for 15 years. But Jason Hayward was supposed to be a superstar. Mm-hmm. When he was young, you looked at him and you're like, that guy's an annual all-star. And he was 20, 21 years old, tearing it up. His rookie year, he was a 6-win player. Mm-hmm. And then basically he's just been a guy since he was 25, 26 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so like that's disappointing. It's not bad. I mean, God, how many guys even have a 15-year career? You know, this is a guy that has almost 200 career home runs. He's a league average hitter though for the entirety of his career. And he was viewed as this guy is a superstar. Well, when he was a rookie, this guy was the next big thing. And Walker has that ability at the plate. He's not quite as athletic as Hayward, mm-hmm. In terms of defense in the outfield. Probably runs as well, probably throws as well, but not as just not as coordinated. Probably yeah. because Hayward was always an outfielder, and
different body types.
Right? Yeah, they're definitely different body types. But I mean, Hayward is 6'5", 240. He's a big dude, but not quite the same as Walker. I would say that Hayward's bat over the life of his career has been a disappointment. And not his play, but his bat. And I think Walker will be a disappointment if he's not a better hitter than that.
Yeah. You know, obviously it worked out well for Hayward to go to the Cubs and forever eat free in Chicago. Yeah. The guy who gave.
And he was good for the year he was here too. I mean,
well, that's what I'm getting to.
He was a 7-win player for the Cardinals. You know what I mean? Like he was really good.
You keep cutting me off with what I'm getting to, man.
I'm sorry. We think the same.
Nah, you know, I would have been really intrigued with where Hayward's career would have gone if he had re-signed with the Cardinals, because whatever he was searching for offensively in the years leading into his time with the Cardinals and then in the years leading out from his time with the Cardinals, he had for a rather remarkable second half, maybe even 4 months offensively with the Cardinals. He was a 7-war player, as you mentioned, but it wasn't all built upon defense like it had been for most of his career. You know, he had figured it out. And I remember, you know, I talked with him about it in Miami.
Yeah.
John Mabry, Bill Miller, you recall, was part of the hitting coaches group there. And they just really, they really feel like they got him to buy in to some of the changes to unlock more power. There was so much of his swing that was just self-inhibiting that he felt comfortable with, that just made it, that took away some of the power that he could naturally produce. And they felt they got it. They made strides. Yeah, it is. It is very similar. And then, and then he leaves just as like, all right, there's the connection there. Gosh, what happens if this flourishes? But then he left.
Yeah, I think he would have ended up in the same place.
Yeah.
If you look at the 3 years before he got here, he was the same guy he was when he was here.
But he
high 700s OPS, you know, 15-16% above average. He's the same guy here as he was the 3 years before he got here.
Yeah, he just wasn't for a pretty long stretch with the Cardinals.
No, he had a terrible start with the Cardinals, and then he had about 5 really good months.
Yeah. 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 I mean, you think about like where he was in the middle of May, right? I mean, he was a 230 hitter and
his second half was amazing.
Yeah. And you know, long about, I don't know. Yeah. His second half was excellent. I mean, long about really June, he tore it up his final 111 games with the Cardinals, which coincides with just about the time that I'm talking about, a 317 hitter, 388 on base percentage, 469 slugging. I mean, that's an 857 OPS. That's strong. I mean, that's strong. And that's not a small sample size.
No, but he had had runs like that.
Plate appearance.
I'm always dubious. I always got the impression and also read places that he's just very stubborn.
He was, yeah.
That he doesn't want to ever, he doesn't want to change. And as soon as he got out of here, he just went back to his whole thing. But that doesn't mean he would have magically changed his personality being here.
But he had changed. Like he had talked.
Well, I mean, he changed for 60 games. It didn't like he changed forever.
It wasn't for 60 games. It was for 111 games. And like he talked about it. Like, okay, I get what they're saying. I'm bought in on this.
Well, then why did he stop doing it?
Because he didn't have the guys that he trusted.
I mean, it doesn't mean you can't take the lessons you're taught and keep applying them.
Right. He chose not to. I don't know, man.
Right. This is my point. My point is, I think he would have eventually gone back to what he always does anyway.
Maybe, but he wouldn't have had the same hitting coaches who he connected with.
It could be, but I mean,
that's what I'm saying. He would have returned to the hitting coaches who he had some rapport with.
I have a hard time with that because all of those things to me are on players.
I'm just going off of what talking to him.
No, I get it. And again, he probably felt that way. I'm not doubting it, but his career history says he's going to do what he always does.
Only us.
Because the Cardinals weren't the only team that ever tried to get him to do those things.
I wanted to talk about Ivan Herrera and his place in the middle of the order and catching. And only us would go in and relitigate 2015. And when I told folks that this was
a 6-hour
podcast, I didn't mean it, Kevin.
Yeah, that's okay. I only got about 10 more minutes, so.
No, we're cutting it off now because
I'm okay.
I am right about. I only think it was
right about a thing that never happened. Yep.
Yep, I am correct about a thing that never happened. But he has a little triggering. I want to close. All right, so I mean, Hayward's a good example of a young hitter. High expectations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never really that number two hitter consistently throughout his career that everybody expected him to be. The Cardinals have a lot of guys right now in this lineup at that precipice of their career.
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to be? How much of this has to work, Kevin, for the Cardinals of the next decade to be any good?
I mean, based on percentages, at least half, right? You're not going to get them all, but you need some. No, that's kind of the way it goes. And by the way, you know, this kind of, I think just as an aside, this is the same dynamic that's in play in about 20 different clubhouses.
Absolutely.
A lot of figuring out how do we get guys to where we think they should be, where their prospect profile said they should be. Baltimore, we just talked about that. They have a lot of that going on right now, like with Adley Rutschman, who's huge. Supposed to be this franchise two-way catcher, you know, face of the franchise, and he can't hit anymore. And he hasn't hit since May of last year. So So again, the Cardinals aren't the only team doing it, but it is the key to success. The teams that do figure that out are the ones that are going to be going to the playoffs and making runs in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So I'd say that of that group that we're talking about, you don't have to get them all, but you probably have to get 40-50%. Maybe it's only like 10, like one out of five that need to really be studs. One out of 10 that need to be real studs, not just good players, but like all-stars.
Yeah, because you know what the Cardinals aren't doing? They're not signing Bryce Harper, Nick
Castellanos, Kyle Schwarber. Not with the numbers going up on those guys. Hell no.
And Trey Turner to be their lineup.
No. And it's really hard to find those situations like we're talking about with Arenado, where a guy's not 35 and the team's willing to move him with one of those deals that's locked in place. I mean, you're much more likely to follow maybe the Goldschmidt path, right? Where it's a guy who's 33, 34 with a year left on a deal and his team's willing to move him. But that's not an easy way to live because now you're living year by year.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to stay? Is he not going to stay? Is he going to be good? When's he going to decline? You definitely need to do this yourself. You definitely need to have your own dudes in there. And they've got some of the pieces, man. It's what's fueling them right now because the big guy that they traded for is not the one fueling their lineup. He's the one sliding down the lineup. You know, it's guys that they brought in on their own. I thought the Contreras signing at the time was fantastic. I loved it, even if he wasn't going to stay at catcher because I love the bat and I love the age and I love the AAV. Mm-hmm. So finding a few more of those would be nice too.
Yeah.
That was a perfect fit.
That is Well, speaking of perfect fits, Kevin, you are for this podcast. So Woo-hoo. Thank you very much. Always enjoy.
You know I love it. You know I love it. I'm addicted to the podcast.
I haven't noticed.
You're my guy, Derek.
I know. I set out to go like, okay, 54 minutes. We got a structure. We got everything. And then
days later.
Yeah. And then a few days later, you got me talking about Jason Hayward in Miami.
Yeah.
2015. So only Kevin Wheeler can do that. You can listen to him on, I believe, every show that KMOX has.
At least everything after 1 o'clock.
Everything after 1 o'clock and occasional appearances on the Gas House Gang when he's allowed, permitted to be on it. When the great Bernie Miklas says, hey, man, I really want to chat with you. So he's on there. You can find him there at KMOX, 1120 AM or 104.1 FM. Did I nail it?
Yeah, we're rocking it, dude. 104.1 FM.
You are, because what the world needs is more Wheeler in stereo.
Oh, dude. I mean, just amplify that volume. Come on.
Yes. Yeah.
It's so great.
For 6 hours.
Not just for me, but it's just great.
Yep. You can find him there. You can find the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcasts. You can find all the constant Cardinals coverage at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you weekly by Closets by Design of St. Louis. For the great Kevin Wheeler, former college catcher and world champion aside and podcast prolonger.
Big talker. I have words. That could be the title of a podcast.
I can't even get my own name in.
No, you can. Sorry. I'll shut up.
Big words. Is that your podcast name?
I have words. That'll be it.
I have words. Words with Kevin Wheeler. Yes. That works. I'm a baseball writer, and I gotta say, I'm going to try to say goodbye to the fine folks without being interrupted. Talk to you soon.
See you, buddy.
See you, Kevin. Thank you.
That was awesome. I love doing that.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.